Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, if you are listening to this right now, you have made a choice.
A very informed choice.
A highly questionable choice.
Yeah.
You have bypassed millions of hours of actually entertaining content on the internet to listen to us discuss, well, a PDF.
A foundational text.
And not just any PDF. I am looking at my screen right now with a profound sense of regret at document 2015-0520.
Yes.
The bylaws of the Jonathan's Landing Golf Club, Incorporated, located in Jupiter, Florida.
The architecture of a society.
We are reading the rule book for a country club. I just have to ask, purely for the record here, was this your idea of a joke? Or is this just another manifestation of your desire to drain the joy out of my life one legal document at a time?
See, this is exactly why you struggle with the bigger picture. You look at this and you see a list of rules for people wearing pastel polo shirts.
Because that is literally what it is.
No, I see a sociological masterclass. This document isn't about golf. It is about the mechanics of exclusion. It's a blueprint for a micro-society that has legally codified its own caste system, its own economy, and its own judicial branch.
It is 20 pages on how to get your deposit back and who is allowed to wear cargo shorts.
It is a study in human desperation and hierarchy, but please, by all means, keep groaning into the microphone. I am sure the listeners are tuning in specifically to hear your air of unearned superiority.
My unearned superiority. I am not the one treating a Florida Golf Club pamphlet like it's the Magna Carta.
It's binding legal structure.
Fine. Let's do this. Let's unpack the bylaws. I started right at the gate with Article 2, Section 2, the admission procedure.
A crucial starting point.
It says explicitly that the club evaluates the applicant's, quote, character and reputation. They request information to confirm eligibility.
Which is the first filter. It is entirely subjective by design. Character and reputation is just legal code for do we like looking at you?
Exactly. And honestly, reading this, I had a thought. I think you would actually survive the credit check.
Mm-hmm.
You have the requisite tediousness to pass as a member.
Oh, thank you.
But the character clause.
Oh, yeah, really?
I feel like that is where you stall out.
Is that so?
Absolutely. Professional buzzkill is not a protected class in Jupiter, Florida. I really don't think they'd let you in.
That is incredibly rich coming from you. I have seen your desk. You wouldn't make it past the front gate unless you were delivering a pizza.
Wow.
But let's assume, just for the sake of the exercise, that someone with actual assets, someone unlike you, wanted to join. They immediately face the hierarchy. Article 2, Section 3, the principal classes.
The caste system.
It is strictly stratified. At the very top, you have the Brahmins, the golf members. They have the run of the place. Golf, tennis, fitness, social events. They basically walk on water.
And they definitely pay for it.
They pay for the privilege of never being told no. Mm. But then you step down a rung to the sports members.
This one feels like a tease to me. You get full tennis, full fitness, but your golf is quote unquote limited.
You are allowed to pay greens fees to play, but only when the real members aren't using the course. You are essentially allowed to smell the freshly cut grass, maybe gaze longingly at the sand traps from a distance, but you better know your place.
Look but don't touch.
Exactly. It's the look but don't touch tier.
Then we have the tennis members. No golf at all. Unless the board feels benevolent and grants you limited privileges, you are basically begging for scraps.
And finally, the bottom of the barrel, the class that I think really speaks to your specific energy, the house members.
Excuse me.
The house member. No golf, no tennis, no fitness. You are paying dues solely for the privilege of eating in the dining room and drinking at the bar.
Honestly.
Yeah.
That actually sounds like the only sane way to do this. You skip the heat stroke and go straight to the cocktails.
It is a membership for people who want the address but have absolutely no actual utility.
I would be fine with that.
They just want to sit in the air conditioning, complain about the temperature of the Chardonnay, and watch the important people walk by. It radiates the exact frequency of your entire career.
I would much rather be a house member eating my overpriced salad in peace than be what you are. Because I've found Section 4D summer members.
A perfectly valid temporary classification.
Temporary is generous. You are admitted for 1 year. You have to reapply every single season.
It serves a logistical purpose.
It is explicitly designed for people the club can tolerate during July and August when it is 100 degrees outside and the actual members have fled to the Hamptons.
They utilize excess capacity.
It is a seat filler role. Mm-hmm. You are the placeholder. We need someone to keep the lights on and pay for the air conditioning while the rich people are gone. That is you. You are a summer member in the movie of life.
I would argue that summer member implies a certain rugged resilience, actually. But since you are so focused on special categories, did you look at the honorary members?
Section 4A, limited to 6 people total, distinguished service to the club or the community.
Which definitely rules out anyone in your social circle. Distinguished service usually involves philanthropy or leadership, not whatever it is you do on the weekends.
And explaining bylaws on a deep dive counts as distinguished service. Please. The only thing you are distinguishing is yourself as a public nuisance.
We can debate my contributions to society later. Look at the math. Turn to Article 2, Section 6K, the cap.
The maximum number of members.
There shall be no more than 799 golf members.
Just 799, not 800.
Exactly. Why 799?
Because they're pretentious.
Because it is calculated. 800 is a crowd. 799 is an exclusive club. They have modeled the tee sheet down to the absolute minute. If they add one more person number 800, the 4-hour round becomes a 4-hour and 15-minute round, and the value of the membership collapses.
It implies exclusion. Sorry, you're number 800. Go home.
It implies value. Scarcity creates value. But of course, you don't understand that. You probably think value is getting a 2-for-1 coupon at a chain restaurant. You don't appreciate the money pit.
Oh, God. The money. We do have to talk about Article 2, Section 5, because this is where the document goes from quirky social club to actual financial hostage situation.
It is a highly sophisticated equity structure.
It is a Ponzi scheme with a dress code. Let's explain the refundable contribution. When you join as an equity member, you pay a massive chunk of cash. They call it a contribution.
It is an interest-free loan you are extending to the club to finance its capital improvements.
It is a loan you can't call in. Say you want to leave, you resign, you want your money back. Do they write you a check?
Not immediately, no.
No, you go on the redemption list.
Article 2, Section 5B, the waiting room.
You sit on a list. You only get paid when a new member joins and pays a new refundable contribution. It is literally, we cannot pay you until we find a new sucker to take your place.
It is the standard model for private equity clubs. The club doesn't use its own operating cash to pay refunds. It recycles the entry fees.
And it gets so much worse. Section 5.C, the 80-20 rule. Even if you are on the list, if a new member joins who doesn't pay the full equity, someone who just pays a non-refundable fee, the club takes 20% of that fee and puts it in the pot to pay off the ghosts on the list.
It ensures liquidity.
It ensures you are trapped. If you are on that list, you're basically praying for the club's marketing director to do their job. You are entirely dependent on new blood.
You are not trapped. You are invested. And the bylaws turn this into an asset. Section 5A says you can transfer the redemption right to a trust or an heir.
An heir.
Yes, you can leave your membership to your children.
That is not an inheritance, that is a curse. Here you go, kids. I'm leaving you a spot on a waiting list in Jupiter, Florida.
It retains value.
If I were your child, God forbid, and you left me this asset, I wouldn't want the tee time. I would want the cash. I would be stuck waiting for Golf Equity Member 799 to sign up just to close out the estate.
That is a very cynical way to view intergenerational wealth. But then again, given your probable net worth, I suppose inheritance is a purely theoretical concept for you anyway. But the math is beautiful. Did you even look at the transition rules?
I tried to skip them. They made my eyes bleed.
You missed the best part. The table at the very end, golf equity before 1996.
Why does it matter?
Because the refund formula changes based on the date you joined. If you joined before November 11, 1996, your redemption is the greater of 80% of the current contribution or 100% of what you paid plus 80% of assessments. But if you joined after 1996,
please stop.
The formula shifts. It is like geological strata. You can cut open the club membership and count the rings of financial desperation.
Nobody cares about the percentage calculations of the 1997 sports equity class. It is so boring.
It proves the system is alive. It proves that the club is just a mechanism for managing debt.
You are the only person I know who gets an adrenaline rush from a depreciation schedule. It's actually pathetic.
It is called intellectual curiosity. You should try it sometime, instead of just scrolling through social media looking for memes about cats.
If the money doesn't make you want to scream, the social engineering definitely will. We have to talk about Section 6, relationships.
Yes. The morality police.
The club gets uncomfortably involved in who you are sleeping with. Article 2, Section 6.A, significant others.
If you are unmarried and living in a permanent relationship, you can request privileges for your partner.
But you have to write a letter. You have to request that the board recognizes your boyfriend.
And you have to prove it meets the criteria adopted by the board. I really wonder what that interview is like. Excuse me, sir, exactly how permanent is this relationship? Are we talking until death do us part or until the lease runs out?
I have to ask, do your permanent relationships usually last long enough to process the paperwork?
Very funny.
Or does the board usually send the application back saying, yeah, we don't think she is going to stick around for the second reading of the minutes?
I will have you know my relationships are built on deep intellectual compatibility, something you know nothing about.
Intellectual compatibility. Is that what you call lecturing someone until they fall asleep?
Better than your strategy, which seems to be find someone who hasn't heard you talk yet. But look at Section 6J, divorce of family members.
This is an absolute nightmare. If a couple divorces, they both become single members.
Immediate downgrade. And usually an increase in dues.
But the kicker is, if they can't agree on who keeps the membership, it might revert to the original holder.
Imagine that negotiation. You are splitting the assets, the house, the cars, the dog. And then the divorce lawyer says, okay, who gets the Tuesday morning tea time at Jonathan's Landing?
I feel like in your case, the hypothetical ex-wife, let's call her Brenda, would definitely take the membership.
Oh, Brenda.
Just out of spite. She doesn't even golf. She just wants to make sure you are stuck on that redemption list we talked about.
Brenda, who doesn't exist, wouldn't have the strategic foresight. But you, I see you scanning Section 6.F surviving spouse.
What are you implying?
I am saying, if you were ever to marry a member, I would advise him to hire a food taster. You would be eyeing that surviving spouse benefit before the honeymoon was even over.
Oh, whatever.
Oh, don't worry, darling. I will handle the transfer of the redemption amount.
You think I would marry someone for a golf membership? I have standards. I would marry for a yacht club, maybe. But I did notice the transition rules mention a widow-widower class that is now closed.
Closed to new entrants, a dying breed.
That is your target demographic, isn't it? You should find yourself a nice original senior member widow. Someone who can appreciate your lectures on bylaw amendments because her hearing aid is turned off.
I prefer to think of them as legacy members. And at least they would understand the importance of rules, unlike you. Which brings us to the most important part of this entire document, Article 3, Governance.
Here we go, the hall monitor section.
The board of directors, 9 members, 3-year terms, and look at the power they have. Section 2A2, the spending caps.
The board can't spend more than $1,194,000 on a single project without a member vote.
$1,194,000, not $1.2 million, $1.194.
Why that number? It is so oddly specific.
Because of the CPI adjustment in Section 8.3, it is inflation-adjusted bureaucracy.
Oh, my God.
It creates a living, breathing ceiling on their power. It prevents the board from using inflation as an excuse to overspend. It is magnificent fiscal governance.
It is pedantic. It's a way for old men to argue about the price of concrete down to the decimal point.
It is fiduciary duty. But the real power isn't the money. It's Section 5B, the standing committees, specifically the Traditions Committee.
The Traditions Committee. Just the name makes me want to violate a dress code.
Their job is to preserve sportsmanship, friendship, and respect, and to enforce dress codes and proper comportment.
Proper comportment. That is a very loaded phrase.
It means act like you belong. And frankly, if we were members of Jonathan's Landing, I'd give you 48 hours before you were summoned before the Traditions Committee.
For what?
For conduct detrimental to the club. Article 2, Section 6, and expulsion. You have a way of disrupting the harmony.
Disrupting the harmony. You are the one who would volunteer for the Traditions Committee, just so you could walk around with a ruler measuring women's skirt lengths.
Someone has to maintain standards.
Excuse me, madam. That hemline is 3 inches above the knee, violating the 2015 bylaws. You would be the club narc. You would be the guy reporting people for wearing cargo shorts in the clubhouse.
Cargo shorts are an abomination, and you know it. They are aesthetic terrorism.
You are just proving my point. You radiate Traditions Committee energy. You want the power to expel people because you can't get them to like you voluntarily.
I don't need them to like me. I need them to respect the rules.
Oh, shut up about the rules. You are such a bore.
And you are a liability. If we were at dinner in the clubhouse, you would be the one causing a scene about a service charge dispute like you did at that cafe last year.
That was a calculation error, and you know it.
Mm.
They charged me for oat milk I didn't order.
It was 50 cents. You held up the line for 10 minutes. That is conduct detrimental to the club. You would be expelled, banned. Section 6N says admitted to club property under no circumstances.
I would be expelled. You would be recalled. Article 3, Section 2.F, recall of a director. the membership would rise up against your droning monologues about the Consumer Price Index.
My monologues protect the assets.
Your monologues destroy the will to live. You are detrimental to the harmony of this studio, let alone a golf club.
I am the only thing keeping this deep dive from devolving into a gossip column.
You are a joyless bureaucrat.
And you are...
See it. Say it.
I am looking at Article 2, Section 4B again.
Ryan, why are you pivoting? We are fighting.
No, wait. I missed something earlier. The clerical members.
The priests? Who cares?
Yo, look at the quota. It says specifically there shall be no more than 6 clerical members at one time.
So?
6. Just 6. Do you realize what that means?
That they don't want too many preachers.
It means even God has a quota at Jonathan's Landing.
Wait, what?
If he can't get a tea time, what hope do we have?
Oh my God.
I mean, honestly. 7 priests show up and the board says, sorry, Father, we are at capacity. Try the municipal course.
Stop. I actually can't. Sorry, God. We are capped at 6. Bylaws are bylaws.
Check the redemption list, Lord. Maybe a spot will open up in 2030.
Oh man, I can't breathe. You know, they would make him pay the initiation fee too.
Absolutely no waivers, not even for divine intervention.
Okay, wow. You win this round. The quota on God wins.
I thought you might appreciate that.
Well, on that note, before the Traditions Committee comes in here to expel us for being too loud, it makes you wonder what invisible bylaws are dictating your life without you even knowing it. Think about that.
We will see you next time, assuming our membership hasn't been revoked.
See you on the next deep dive.